The Jericho Network on Westwood One. Thanks so much for downloading Talk is Jericho. I've got WWE Tag Team, the mysterious Goldust, and Stardust here with me this week, also known as the Rhodes Brothers, Dustin and Cody. They grew up watching their dad, the one and only Dusty Rhodes, and we'll hear what it's all about to grow up in the world of pro wrestling, knowing it's what you're going to do when you get older, knowing it's your destiny, knowing it's the passion of your life. You're going to be surprised by some of the stories you're going to hear as told by Dustin and Cody, and you also might be surprised what I'm going to say next. You need to be snacking more. Seriously, before you start sending me the hate tweets about what's wrong with you, Y2J, I'm going to get fatter from snacking more, eh? Just let me say this, naturebox.com, okay? Remember that, naturebox.com. I just discovered NatureBox, and not only are their snacks delicioso, they're also better for me so I don't feel guilty about eating them. Natural, zero trans fat, zero high fructose corn syrup, and check this out, they ship it to you for free. That's right, free shipping right to you. And NatureBox.com has hundreds of snacks. So far, I've had the PBJ granola, the baked sweet potato fries, the sweet blueberry almonds, the cashews with the seasoning on them. So many good snacks. I can't even tell you which is my favorite, but I can tell you this. My pantry is stocked, and I'm hooked on NatureBox.com. You will be, too. It's the perfect guilt-free cure for your afternoon hunger and crankiness. You got to have a snack, feeling a little down, depressed, and lonely, gotta have something to move you and get your energy up. This is perfect. NatureBox.com. Try it right now and get 50% off your first box by going to NatureBox.com/Jericho. That's NatureBox.com/Jericho. Snack smarter. Stay full in the process. This is good stuff. Trust me. I enjoy these snacks. Go check it out. NatureBox.com/Jericho. And do it right now.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer.
Singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world. This is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the part of the now. And rock and roll. The spell you run down will be broken by Chris Jericho. It's episode 62 of Talk is Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. It's the remedy for boredom. Let's go for a ride. Yeah, I could have kept that going all day long. The Zoo from the Scorpions, still reflecting back on the Matthias Japs interview I did a couple shows ago. If you have not heard it, it's amazing. And the Scorpions are great because they always had Klaus Meine, the vocalist, would always stand on stage and randomly hit a cowbell, even in songs where there were no cowbells. So there you go, a little bit of Scorpions history for you. A little bit more history for you. How you doing, Jericho-holics? Today is a great day. It's a great day because we've got on the show Goldust and Stardust, two of the most mysterious characters in the WWE right now. Goldust, one of the most controversial characters in WWE history, and are also brothers, Dustin and Cody Rhodes. Before we talk to them, we got lots of great stories. I got to tell you, if you're digging this podcast, please subscribe, share, rate, and review it on iTunes. If you subscribe, then you'll never miss an episode. That's a good deal. And hey, let me give you a couple shout outs to some of you who took the time to subscribe, rate, and leave a comment on iTunes. Jay Trendy, and I love this name, Cliff Amal 976, both gave Talk is Jericho a 5-star rating. Thank you so much. Thanks for telling your friends. Tell your friends about us. I love doing this for you guys. It's become a real real cool kind of weekly thing for me to do. But let me tell you, though, it's funny. A lot of people say, well, Chris, tell us about what's the average day in the life of Chris Jericho? Well, I'm not going to just do an average day. I'm going to do the last couple days for you just so you get an idea just how nutty my schedule can be sometimes. So I got home from, what did I do? Last week I did Raw and SmackDown. I got home, had a couple days off. Then Saturday morning, my flight was at 6 a.m., so I got up at 3 a.m. to fly to Syracuse for K-Rockathon, a big radio festival there that Fozzy killed it at. We had some sound issues, so sound-wise it wasn't the best show, but energy and reaction-wise it was off the chizane. I vetted it, which is what I call it whenever there's a scaffold. I always climb it because it's fun and because people always get a kick out of it, and I never ask for permission. Always easier to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. They always say, you shouldn't have climbed that scaffold. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I should have asked. Promoters, radio show festivals, if you see Fozzy on the bill and you have a scaffold, know that I'm going to be climbing it. It's just what I do, man. It's how I am. So then we did the festival, did a meet and greet, did a signing. I was super tired, and I was actually in bed sleeping by 9:15 p.m. That's the earliest I think I've ever gone to sleep. I think when I was 10, I still went to bed at 9:30 or 10 o'clock or something along those lines. Then the reason why I went to bed so early is because I knew I had to get up at 3:30 again to catch another 6 in the morning flight to fly to San Antonio. Arrived in San Antonio about noon, went over and did an in-store for Fozzy, Do You Want to Start a War, a signing, which had been going great. You can check out all my in-stores over the next few months. I can actually even pull it up for you so you don't have to even check it out. Here's some in-store information. Portland next August 11th at Music Millennium. I'm also in Las Vegas at Zia Records on August 18th. Then I am in Des Moines on September 1st at the FYE Jordan Creek Town Center. Baltimore on October 2nd, Soundgarden, Knoxville October 3rd, Disc Exchange, say that three times fast, Disc Exchange, then October 10th, Rochester at the Record Archive. It's great to do these in-stores, having you come on down and say hi. After my in-store, I went to the venue. I wrestled my match against Bray Wyatt, and then I did a podcast with an upcoming guest, which was great, kind of upstairs in the arena. And some people still don't know what podcasts are. They're a little bit confused when I ask, a little bit concerned that I'm going to ask, like, tell us the dirt. Of course, you know my podcast. We just have a good time. And I haven't done a podcast yet where after I was done, someone didn't go, wow, that was a great time. That was really, really cool. I'm really excited that I did it, and et cetera, et cetera. So then I drove. I stayed in San Antonio. Then in the morning, got up, drove to Austin, had interviews from 11 to 12 a.m. Then went to do an in-studio radio interview in Austin. Then went to another in-store. Then went to the venue where the WWE Raw was, did a Reddit question and answer. Then put together my match, then did interviews for the network and did promotional reads, did my match, did an interview afterwards for SmackDown. Now I'm in a hotel room in Austin. Tomorrow we fly to Los Angeles. We get in at 1 o'clock. We have a 10-hour layover until we leave to go to Australia. We fly in Australia. We arrive that morning at 7:30 a.m. and then later on that night we wrestle. Next day, fly to Sydney. Next day, fly to Perth, which is a 5-hour flight. Do the show in Perth. Next morning, get up at 3 again. We have a 5:30 flight to fly 5 hours back to Perth and then 14 hours back to Los Angeles and then another 3.5 hours to Portland. So you get to see kind of the real world behind being a WWE superstar. A lot of traveling, and it's worth it. You know, I'm excited to go to Melbourne and Sydney and Perth. I haven't wrestled in Australia for almost 10 years, as crazy as that sounds. I've been to Australia with Fozzy, I think, 4 times since the last time I actually wrestled there. So I am excited to go back to Foz, Australia. Australia is Jericho. But, you know, even tonight, I mean, finished the match, got out of the venue, finished all my work, probably about 10:30, quarter 11, looked for a place to eat, couldn't find anything, so then came into my room, and now I'm just kind of sitting in my room. I left my phone cord
at the building. So I've got 61% charge on my phone, and I'm having a bottle of water that I got for free because I'm a Diamond member, thanks to the Hilton, and I'm eating a Quest bar. You guys like protein bars? This isn't even an ad. Quest bars is my favorite right now. 7 net carbs, 5 grams fat, and 25 grams of carbs. So there's a little bit of carbs in here. And dietary fiber of those carbs, 18 grams, 4 grams sugar. So it's a pretty good one. And most importantly, 30 grams of protein. If you're going to try a protein bar, try Quest. The apple pie flavor is my favorite. I usually have one of those every day. I stock my bag up with it. And I actually even bought a gun case now as well to put my beleaguered jacket in. It's just dying. It's dying, and I'm holding on as long as I can, waiting for my guys in California to not just repair one jacket, but two. I have two jackets in the shop right now. And my last one, it's dying a death. You know, it needs a good week of repairs. And I only, of course, only have 2 or 3 days. So I figured rather than folding it and unfolding it constantly, which snaps the wires because they're so fragile, I just bought a gun case and I put my jacket in that gun case and then just carry it around in that. So you should see me checking that in at the airport. What's it? What's in that case, sir? A jacket? A jacket? Yes, a jacket. What kind of a jacket goes in a gun case? And then I guess, well, it's a show business jacket, and it's got lights in it, it's got wires, and I'm sure that that thing is getting checked out every single day. But I got to do it, man. That's the thing. It's the corner that I painted myself into. I came up with this cool, revolutionary idea. But now it's become so much a part of my entrance. If I don't do it, it's like Kiss coming on stage without platform boots, you know, or, you know, it's just I have to have it. And the fact that it's dying is so frustrating because I, you know, I want it to be at its tip top, but I just don't have the technology. So I'm trying, guys. I know a lot of people like to send me tweets. Oh, your jacket didn't work tonight. I know. Back off, okay? I'm almost at the point where I'm going to go buy one of those replica jackets at the Halloween stores and wear one of those. And you'll probably never know the difference, okay? Right? Do you want to start a war? Debuting at number 54 on the Billboard charts. So amazing. Lights Go Out, still climbing the charts. I think the last was like number 34. What do you think? All the reviews have been amazing. Well, there's still a couple stinky reviews, but that's just life. People talking over and over again about SOS, the cover of SOS. I mean, I think 9 out of 10 reviews that I get on the record mention SOS, and people can't believe we did it, and it really sounds cool. I'm not going to pat ourselves in the back, but I'm going to pat myself in the back. So let's check it out. I mean, this is SOS by ABBA from Fozzy from Do You Want to Start a War? If you haven't heard it, here's your chance. If you have heard it, crank it up. Here we go.
Where are those happy days? They seem so hard to find. I tried to reach for you, but you have closed your mind. Wish I understood. It used to be so nice. It used to be so good.
Yeah.
tell me what you think on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, at I Am Jericho. Give me all your thoughts. And what do you think of the last couple podcasts? I think last week with Matthias Jabs was great. Peter Robbins, UFO Hunter. I love those type of shows. I'm going to do more of them because I'm really interested in the supernatural, lake monsters, Bigfoot, UFO, ghosts, demons, antichrist, witches. So I'm going to get more into that. So stay tuned. Today, I'm going to get more into the lives and careers of Cody and Dustin Rhodes, Stardust and Goldust, respectively.
But first, I got to give a thank you to my sponsors as well, and that includes DraftKings.com. America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, and one of the reasons why everybody loves to play at DraftKings.com. The Week 1 $5 million kickoff bash. Football season's basically here. Preseason games are starting, people! And I know you guys have already been scouting players and stats for your season-long fantasy football games. Well, here's your chance to have that hard work and great research pay off immediately. You can win instant cash at DraftKings.com. Fantasy football is so much more fun at DraftKings because you can win serious cash starting the very first week of the season. How'd you like a piece of that $5 million pie? That $5 million cherry pie? It could happen. All you got to do is go to DraftKings.com and enter DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. And check this out. Just enter Y2J at DraftKings.com and you'll get free entry into the Week 1 $5 million kickoff bash. That's Y2J for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk inviting you to download the Eddie Trunk podcast at podcastone.com. Gonna have some fun each and every week. Mixed bag of a lot of things. Interviews with some of your favorite artists. Maybe talk to some of the behind the scenes people. Get into some commentary. Answer some of your email. We'll have some good fun. So don't miss it. The Eddie Trunk podcast every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Talk is Jericho.
Right, backstage in Wildwood on the beach, Jersey Shore, with Cody and Dustin Rhodes. The Rhodes boys are here, man. It's good to have you guys.
It's great to be here.
Together. Dustin, are you here?
You're the legend.
So we drove here, all three of us, not together, but last night in Madison Square Garden. How cool is it just to work in Madison Square Garden, man? I mean, just being in there.
Cody, how many times have you actually been in the Garden now?
Twice with you, and before that, I think only two other times.
Three times with me.
Three times with you?
Yeah.
We did the...
Only two other times, so five times total.
Five times.
Garden yeah. About 56.
You probably about the same, right?
Yeah.
You know, it must be kind of neat for you guys, though, to be tag-teaming in the Garden. Like, it doesn't get any bigger than that. And as brothers, to be in there together, was it kind of a special moment for you?
I actually, I was thinking about it last night. The time on the Christmas loop was where we did the moonsault off the cage.
All right.
The successful moonsault off the cage with Cesaro and Jack Swagger. And for whatever reason, that one always sticks out as, I don't know.
Impressive.
Well, maybe the most... most fun, or perhaps the most I've ever seen Dustin give a shit about me, because his eyes after I landed told like the whole story. Like, are you okay?
Done that before. How crazy, like, to moonsault off the cage. I mean, I remember Angle did it a couple times, and then you kind of got this reputation over the last few months for doing these moonsaults off the top of the cage. I know you did it. Did you do it on TV once too? What's the deal?
I don't know
TV. What happened? What's the deal, man? You just go up there, and what's your mindset? It's pretty crazy.
As you know, because you are Chris Jericho, who has rocked the Garden on many occasions. It was the ricketiest cage we have, the live event style cage.
So there's
no truss gimmick on the top.
Like one of those fence cages, right?
Yeah. But and I don't date back as far as like the Snuka Morocco incident. I was not alive, but I know of it. And it seemed like one of those situations where it was just, because I actually have a small fear of heights, just a small fear. Mm-hmm. I can't look down for real long. But it seemed like one of those situations that I didn't care as long as I got my neck over.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only concern, and everything else was like, I even smiled for a brief moment up on top, and then just, it's just like a chance to perhaps live forever. So it was, you know, a lot of fun.
Looking up at it, as I've gotten knocked on my ass and laying in the corner, knowing that, okay, Cody's climbing up now, and he's fixing to do this moonsault, and I'm watching, and I'm looking up, and I'm like, oh, my God. And the place just starts rising, man. Just the noise, the crowd, as he starts lifting. He gets up there, and he takes just a split second before he goes, and I'm just watching, and I'm like, please, don't break your neck.
Please,
don't
Lord, fall.
Come on, we're on a hell of a run. Let's don't mess this up. I didn't really care about him. I just...
For yourself.
Keep the run going. Run.
It would mess up your run, yeah.
Mess up that run. And he landed so good, man. It was perfect. And it was just like, oh, God, thank God. And they popped. It was big. It was nice.
It's literally death-defying to do something like that. And it's also something, too, that people, you know, on the outside don't realize how important it is to have somebody who knows how to catch you on something like that. You know? And Cesaro caught you in the garden, correct?
Perfectly.
The garden, the execution of the garden moonsault was picture perfect.
But the other one was not picture perfect.
It was picture perfect. And then there was actually one that no one seemed to care about or ever saw the following night in Hartford, Connecticut.
Was that also another live event?
That was off a higher cage. And like the social media buzz and everything that got generated from the garden, the next night we did it thinking...
This is even better.
It's a moonsault tour. It's just going to be another videos everywhere. It's going to go viral, and no one.
But that just goes to show what the garden is.
Yep.
You know? So let's talk about this. So, I mean, obviously you guys both grew up as the son of Dusty Rhodes, but different generations, right? I mean, how much older are you, Dustin, than Cody is?
I don't know. How old are you, Cody?
15 years?
29, so I believe Dustin is 16 years
16, old. So 16 years. So... All the years that you were working, starting out working, and you were just a kid watching, mm-hmm. I mean, was it kind of destined? Did you always want to be in the business? Oh. Did you always want to be a wrestler?
Yeah, I think.
And you too, Dustin?
Yeah.
I did, yes. Definitely.
From like the moment of being a little kid?
I mean, I had football scholarship offers and things like that, but my grades just weren't cutting it. And, you know, Dad didn't want me to get into business. You know the whole story. And yeah. It's just... I kept pushing, and finally just, you know, said, okay, you're going to... I picked him up from the airport in Dallas, and it's about a 40-mile drive home, and he explained to me just about everything that I needed to know, that I was going to drive to Amarillo, Texas, 350 miles from Dallas, referee my first match, and that's how I was going to be broken into the business. Do that. Second match of that night, I'm refereeing. Tommy Young is on the front row. And I'm reffing Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express. Everybody's watching. It's a curtain sellout. Whoa. You know, I'm scared to death. I don't know really what I'm doing. I'm just going down counting, trying to stay out of the guys' ways. And my dad sent me to Champ Sporting Goods to buy some referee pants and a referee shirt.
Well, was that in Dallas? Or
that was in Dallas. The show was in Amarillo.
Yeah, yeah.
I bought some black cotton pants. So when I went down for the finish and the count, 1, 2, 3, I get up and Tommy Young and everybody in the building is laughing, and I'm like, oh shit, what did I do wrong? Oh my God, I did something. I'm lifting up Ricky and Robert's hands, and Tommy points down to my crotch area, and I'm ripped all the way to the back belt loop, and just everything was hanging out, and I'm just like, oh God. So that was your first break
into the business, right? Yeah. Was it hard to break in, though, being like the son? Because your dad was the booker at that point in time in NWA, WCW,
yeah,
correct?
It was. He sent me to Florida,
mm-hmm.
where I learned from Mike Graham and Steve Kern. And for about 2 years, I made about $20 a night.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of sent me there to pay my dues, I guess, and learn the ropes and travel every day and just learn how to work. And
what about Skandar? When did you run into Skandar?
Skandar, I trained in his gym in Dallas for about a month in an old boxing ring, no ropes, just mainly mat wrestling, just kind of chain wrestling around and things with Jackie Brown. I mean, not Jackie Brown, Miss Jacqueline. Miss
Texas. Oh, really? Jackie?
Whoa,
oh.
We broke in at the same time.
Well, yeah, and you kind of laugh when he mentioned no ropes and all that stuff. But when I trained at the Hart Brothers camp, even though there was no Hart Brothers there in Calgary, we had to do like dry land training and, you know, stretching all that stuff for about 2 weeks before we were allowed inside the ring.
Yeah.
That's just how it was back then, to kind of weed out the pretenders and see who really wanted to do this and who just wanted to get in the ring and run around and be a wrestler, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the way that things were done back in those times. But did you get people kind of looking down on you at first, Dustin, because you were the son of Dusty Rhodes, with kind of a little bit of a, I don't know if it's bullying is the word, but kind of people giving you ribs or kind of treating you like crap because of that?
I got a lot of ribs in Florida, you know, but they were just fun ribs.
Mm-hmm.
If people were talking and things like that, I really didn't see that.
So it wasn't over the top.
A good time.
Yeah.
You know, enjoying it. That was probably the best time I've had in the business.
In Florida?
Yeah, it was when I started. $20 a night. It was just fun, man. It was just learning, you know, getting juice.
Yeah.
Just having fun, man. Just really.
Getting juice.
All the Rizzats. It was crazy, man. 19 years old, just
right.
Not a care in the world.
And, you know, and even $20 a night times, you know, 6-7 nights a week, that's $150 a week. That's a lot of money when
we
you're 19 years old.
Night too. And then once a month, we would go to the Bahamas, and that was a big treat for us. So.
Oh, wow. And who was on top in the territory at the time? Was that like a Brody? No, Brody would have been gone by then.
I think Al Perez.
Oh, okay.
Al Perez was there. Was the Florida heavyweight champion.
So
Mark Starr was right there.
So you're dealing with about 86 or so. 88. Okay,
yeah.
88. So, because I remember watching Saturday's main event, and the big angle was you were sitting in the front row. Was that kind of like your big break in the big leagues? Because you came to the WWE 90, right?
Yeah.
So that was before you went to WCW, whatever, you started WWE. That was the initial first kind of national exposure that you had, right? Because I remember that you sat in the front row, and this is like the son of Dusty Rhodes, and then you got beat up, and I think you got color.
That was my first hard way.
What was that angle? Who was that with?
It was DiBiase and Virgil.
Ah, okay.
Dad was working Macho Man, and they were doing their thing, and he, you know, Million Dollar Man comes out, and he tries to buy off everybody on the front row, and does, except me. I don't accept it. We get into a little altercation. They clothesline me over the rail. I'm trying to fight back, and then all of a sudden, the old wooden chairs, like in the old buildings, you know, the folding wooden chairs,
went
with a straight shot instead of straight over, and just caught me right in the top of the head, and I just went down. Dad crawled out of the ring. You know, the match
covered
was
you.
Over. Oh, my boy. Yeah, my boy. So that's what started that. It was fun.
He was hitting him with double axes on the back.
Everywhere. Now, you, were you even born at the time?
Were 90? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how old were you then? Two, three?
No. I was like, during that, 5-6 years old.
So were you watching this, knowing what's going on?
No, I think I was, without knowing it, I think I was sheltered from the situation going on. Plus, it was an awkward time when he went to WWE.
Like, when Dusty went to WWE.
Yeah, when he went and did the polka dots and the... I mean, it seems very much like he was enjoying himself.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, got to do something with Dustin. But at home, it seemed very just business. It was something that I think he was... The polka dot era might have been something he did a little bit more for the money than any of the other times in the industry he had.
I've said
Dad was very kayfabe with us.
That was kind of the old style, right?
Yeah, he didn't tell me anything about anything.
Wow.
Until I was 15 years
really?
Old.
Really?
Yes.
So that would have been probably 2000 or so. 2000. And at that point, you could go online and read that wrestling was a show business.
Basically,
thing.
I learned it more outside, a little bit of what was really happening, mm-hmm. because it was almost counterproductive to not
tell
a 15-year-old what's going on, who's coming to the shows. And there's an example of, you were probably there, when Ming Woodchair, it was a live event, WCW live event, he just shatters it. Mm-hmm. over Dream's mm-hmm. head, who's like held in the crucifix position, mm-hmm. and he's bleeding all over the place, and it's traumatic.
Bad
for
news,
me.
Yeah.
And I came backstage, and I was of the age, like, I wasn't gonna, I obviously cannot win a fight with Ming at 14, 15 years old, but he's still my dad, so it was like, well, guns a-blazing. So I remember we went in his little dressing room, and he's sitting there, and he's bleeding still, and Ming walked in. And I didn't know what to do. And I was moments away from, I don't know, punching him in the stomach. Or, you know, just some move.
Yeah.
And then, like, Dad shook his hand. And then he didn't say a word. He just kind of nodded his head, shook his hand, and he left. And I asked, like, afterwards, like, what? And he said, well, out there is competitive, you know, competitive. Back here, we have respect for each other. He's still, there's never once been a conversation with him where he said, this is this and not this. Never had that conversation. Never.
To this day. It's funny. It's almost like when you're a second or third generation wrestler, it's almost like the birds and the bees talk. Like my parents never had the birds and the bees talk with me. I had to find out about it from my friends. Yep. It's almost the same. Cause I remember Brett told me that, you know, he used to get in fights at school about wrestling being real. Cause Stu never filled him in, or Rocky got in a fight, or he would want to attack the guys that beat up his dad in the locker room in Hawaii. You just don't know for sure. Was there a moment like that for you, Dustin?
There was, and I was probably, you were 15, you said?
When the Ming thing?
Yeah.
Maybe 12 then.
See, 12 for me too, yeah. And it was in Orlando, and Dad took me, you know, just from Tampa. He just loaded me up in the truck, taught me how to throw beer bottles at
signs. Signs
the Dick
that.
Murdoch classic.
And then he was getting the crap beat out of him by the spoiler, Keith, and I was just like, I'm scared of the spoiler to this day still, kind of, you know, just because of...
He wore a mask, right?
Experience. Yeah. And just bloodied him up. And I'm sitting up by Gordon Sully, and he's walking back after the match. I'm just looking at him, you know, and I start walking down the stairs, and he just puts his hand up, and he just winks at me. So I was like, okay, I guess I need to stay up here. But, you know, I was just, like, worried. Didn't say anything on the ride home. I didn't ask.
It was just...
He's
very intimidating, so it's like... To ask him a question like that, you're not sure if he's going to snap at you or what.
He doesn't want the magic to end. That he loves it so much, the magic doesn't end. So to have the conversation, he considers us his biggest fans.
Sure.
So it would be the magic doesn't end.
I gotcha.
Even when Flair broke his leg.
The cast.
He wore the full cast even at home.
Yeah.
Really?
I was just in junior high then.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, he's wearing a cast, his legs broke, you know. And I didn't see any slit down the cast that said that it was...
That he just put it on and off.
At nighttime.
Yep.
He wore it around the house with crutches, and I'm just like, okay.
How crazy is that when you think about it, right?
I remember the...
How crazy is that?
Real crazy.
Kept the cast for a long time. I remember seeing it in his closet and being like... he has legs that are literally like this big.
Yeah.
Like his calves and stuff, but I remember it was... All you had to do is just peel it open.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah, you had it on standby.
Last week on Raw, something happened during the lockup, and I got a cut on my ear, and it was bleeding a lot. Like, no big deal. But they're there with the alcohol pads, and are you okay, and do you need this? I'm like, are you kidding me?
Wait for me.
Like we used to, like, you know, cut our heads off with everything and, you know, wear fake casts for 6 months for no reason. Just how the times have changed, though. Did you think that – I've told Dusty this before. Do you think that – we're talking about the polka dots earlier, that was a rib from Vince? It was kind of a rib gimmick?
I do.
I think – you think it is?
Yeah, I do.
I don't.
Why?
I just think it was Vince. The charisma – that Pop had, and like the way he was as a performer in the NWA, I think it was just Vince's way of putting a picture on it. I don't know if polka dots, I think that's just the first thing that came to mind. I think Dad sometimes thinks everything's about him. He thinks this, he'll talk about stuff that happens with me sometimes that he thinks is about him. And I don't think the world revolves so much around...
I just always had a feeling, maybe you'll agree with me on this, Dustin, that you know, back in those days with WCW and WWE, there really was like this war. And we talk about it now, even like the Monday Night Wars. You know, dude, Monday Night Wars were real for your team, my team, everything. And I have a feeling that Vince was just kind of like, all right, he's the most charismatic guy in the business, is he? Okay, let's put him in polka dots and see how charismatic he is. Let's see him get over with polka dots.
That's what I think.
And what does he do? He goes and gets over with polka dots. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just seems something that Vince would kind of do, right?
I do think Sapphire was kind of a rib. Let's add fuel to the fire, I think. Because I think he told me originally it was supposed to be like a Lady USA. Like a
hot chick, like, or something?
Yeah, like a normal valet.
Oh, I gotcha. Like a Miss America type thing or something. Type. Right.
And
that just doesn't fit there.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
That USA. Sapphire was the bomb.
She got over too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just a fan. They picked her out of the front row.
Picked her out of the crowd.
Dancing.
Might as well, right? Now, you know, we mentioned earlier about how you made your debut on Raw, or sorry, on Saturday Night Main Event, and you got color, but it didn't last very long. You guys were gone pretty quickly afterwards. Was that a dusty thing?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Dad was wanting to go back to Florida or
WCW probably, right? Sure. Yeah.
And I wanted to go with him. Mm-hmm. So I just asked Vince the same night that he finished up, which was the Royal Rumble in Miami. And I said, can I go? And the story Dad tells, and Vince let me go, you know, with Dad. Oh. But I leave, and Dad's still there, and Vince says, I just want you to know something. You can take him now, but when you're done with I'm going to bring him back up here and make him a star.
Really?
Dad will tell that story, and I don't know, like, when that happened or what.
The words he used exactly with me is he said that he was told, go ahead and take him and get him over, and then I'm going to steal him back.
Hmm.
That was what he told me.
Okay,
he told
something
him.
Like that.
Something
yeah,
like
I
that.
Just, I went with Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to go with Dad.
That's a pretty cool statement, though, to have Vince say that, you know, anytime.
It's a win-win for you.
Well, yeah, right? Exactly. So, I mean, you worked in WCW for a while. Then there's, I mean, I even remember this because I grew up in Canada where there wasn't a lot of WCW, but there was the big blacktop brawl, I believe is what it was called, right? It was you and was it
King of the Road match.
King of the Road match.
King of the Road.
Was it the blacktop? No, the blacktop bully.
With the blacktop bully.
And that was Barry Darso.
The driver had been paid off.
So, you might even remember the match better than he does, but what was the match? You guys were fighting in the back of a truck, a flatbed truck?
We were up in North Georgia, you know, uncensored. We pulled up at some farmhouse. They gave me the directions to go there, and they built this cage around this 18-wheeler trailer bed. And we're sitting on two buses trying to come up with what we're going to do. We got a helicopter in the field. We got cars, trucks. That's some honky-ass stuff right there.
Now, this is not post-production. Cody is doing this on his phone right now.
I love this song.
A lot of people like this song.
This used to get a really good chick pop. The ladies love Dustin.
He's the son of a what? And
The son of a gun. Natural. Damien Sandow knows the whole song.
Sounds like the Dukes of Hazzard theme song, like
apparently,
a Waylon Jennings or something.
PSA has had some hand
I'm
in
sure he did.
Song.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so you pull up there, natural Dustin Rhodes.
We're in somebody's field right now.
And this is for real. It's just shoot field, and this is... Yes. Yeah, okay.
There's a house with right beside it, and these people are just hanging out watching to see what's going on. We're in the bus talking about what we're going to do here, you know, and we finally come up with a plan, and we get on the truck. We start driving down the road about 40 miles an hour, I guess, through these winding North Georgia mountain roads. Helicopters overhead, and the object is to get to the front of the trailer and pull the bell, which is hanging up, you know, and that's the winner of the match. I don't know. It's just
the King of the Road match.
King of the Road.
Both
I
got
mean,
juice. Both got fired for it, and you know,
oh,
the
so
rest
you,
is history.
You weren't supposed to get juice.
This was a.
It was a big controversy,
budget, right?
It
though
it was okayed because I did call because at that point, you know, we were not allowed to get juice, you mm-hmm. know, so I called to make sure it was okay, and they said, yes, it's okay, but we got fired anyways.
Who
Mike
did you,
Graham included.
Who did you call? Who
Eric.
Was in charge? Oh, so Bischoff
Eric.
Was there,
yes.
right. And this was a big budget production.
Yeah, they had a helicopter shot. The majority of the thing was shot by the helicopter.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot longer than what you saw on the
yeah.
pay-per-view.
I was.
This was really good, actually. But you know,
there was a whole story. The driver, Dustin's about to ring the bell, and the driver takes that wild turn, and he doesn't ring the bell.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. But, and then I had to. I remember watching like, who played him off? Was it
Jimmy Golden?
No,
Colonel Parker.
Colonel Parker, right? Wasn't it the Colonel?
I don't know any of that stuff.
I feel like it was the Colonel who paid him off.
That's why I love having Cody here. He knows everything,
man.
I know the Colonel has apparently had a really big penis, is what I heard about the Colonel.
Jeez.
So that's one thing that I know. That's about the only thing I know about the Colonel.
His name is the Colonel.
The Colonel, that's right. So how was it when Bischoff first came into WCW? Was it a big change? Or I guess that was pre-NWO, right?
Yeah.
That's when the big change came.
It was good.
Yeah, just another guy, though, basically. Yeah.
I remember.
He made it right when I went back.
When you went?
Firing me, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He made it good.
So why did you...
Good.
Why did you get fired, though?
We got fired for the juice.
But, like, political reasons? That
I think.
Open up some money, right?
Well, yeah, open up some money for some other guys coming in.
Yeah.
The
old story.
Nice contracts. I don't know what Barry was making. And then, you know, Mike Graham, they let him go, too, because he was a part of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then you've never really been without a job. You go From WWE to WCW, back to WWE. You've made more returns than I have.
Yeah,
I think you, me, and Marty Jannetty have the record for WWE comebacks. So we're here with Goldust and Stardust, a.k.a. the Rose Brothers, the tag team taking the WWE by a mysterious storm. And coming up, we'll get into how the Goldust character was created, find out the mustache guy, too, who was the mustache guy. But first, you got to show a little love to DDP and DDP Yoga, a proud sponsor of Talk is Jericho. And as I've said many times, the main reason I'm still able to do what I do in the WWE. If not for DDP Yoga, I wouldn't be wrestling anymore. It's that simple. I do it 3 or 4 times a week, although lately I've been a little bit lazier. I can't be. I'm going to do some yoga tomorrow before we go to Australia. But hey, you don't have to be a pro athlete to do DDP Yoga. This workout program is great for people of all ages, all fitness levels. This is a cardio workout that will improve your strength and flexibility. I am living proof of that. Easy on your joints. I'm living proof of that as well. It's low impact. People, because you listen to my show, Sexy Beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, you can get a great deal on the Max Pack, 15 workouts, nutrition guide, recipes, poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga, and you can even download the MP3 so you can work out whenever and wherever you want. It's so important. I'm going to do it in my hotel room tomorrow before I go to the airport, okay? DDP, making it as easy as possible for you to get in shape and stay in shape. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you guys. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. But listen, this offer is not going to last forever. Go to the ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of it now. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And you can also find this great deal by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. Check it out. You won't regret it.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Talk is Jericho.
I'm here with the Rhodes brothers, Goldust and Stardust, Dustin and Cody Rhodes. So let's talk about Goldust, one of the best characters in WWE history as far as I'm concerned, one of the most successful creations from Vince McMahon. I would put it up there with Kane and Undertaker as far as longevity, and a good idea that a performer like you, you took it to the next level. But tell us, what did Vince say to you, Dustin, when he was going to put you in this, at the time, in the mid-90s, a very controversial character?
So I'm sitting at home without a job after, you know, being released by Eric. It's about 8 months. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And all of a sudden, the phone rings. It's Vince and Bruce Pritchard on the other line.
Mm-hmm.
And I get on there, and he says, "This is Vince McMahon. How are you doing, Dustin?" I said, "Great, great." You know, so we sit down talking. He said, "Are you sitting down? I have this idea. I want to run it by you." You know, and I said, "Yes, I'm sitting down." Well, we have this character. We call him Goldust, and he's very androgynous, and he goes on to explain it. And right now I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what the hell androgynous means, you know? I'm just agreeing with him. Yeah,
uh-huh,
yeah,
sounds
yeah.
good.
At that time, me and my father hadn't talked for like 5 years, so mm-hmm. we had a big falling out.
Falling out, right.
And
falling out had just started.
Or maybe it just started, a couple years into that or
just,
something
well,
like that.
Well, just started because your original gold
See,
dust there, vignettes.
There's the memory right there. Mm-hmm. There's the brain.
See? Top hat. Everything. They aired at my sister Kristen's house. And as a young age, I did not know what was going on. But him and Dad were both in the same house, didn't speak. And they were all in one room watching
this, the vignette.
This big moment for him. And we were kind of excluded. But I didn't know why. I didn't know how long this was going to last or
gotcha.
What the situation
what the story was.
He explains the character. I hang up the phone. I rush to the dictionary. I look up androgynous. I look at the word and I'm like, okay. I'm going to show him. And basically I was talking to Dad.
Right.
I'm going to show him, you know, that I can do something on my own. Without the name Rhodes mm-hmm. behind it, you know, that I can get something over or do my damnedest trying. And, you know, after so many meetings of going up to Stanford and finally nailing down the character as to what Vince wanted, went out, some of the live events, Tried some stuff. You know, I'd never been a heel either, so that was a learning experience. And trying to learn this this character was tough. And it took me a good 6 to 8 months to actually decide that I wanted to take Salvio Vega's advice and go behind him and rub up and down his chest. Didn't want to do any of the gay stuff, you know, and but it just wasn't working. So finally I tried that, and I did that in the garden, I think it was. And the people, as soon as I rubbed up and down his chest, he turned around and bowed up at me, and I split out of the ring, and the people just went, "Oh, you son of a bitch," started calling me all kinds of names. I'm like, whoa, okay, wait a minute. All right, maybe just because Vince didn't ever say the word gay, you know, androgynous, okay, this was pretty easy. Let me try something else. And I rolled back in and did something else. Same reaction. I was like, oh, God, I got this. And from that point on, it was
then you
like,
knew exactly who the character was.
And learning the heel stuff was difficult for me, but finally did. And, you know,
I think knowing how Vince is, I bet you that's one of the reasons why he put you in Goldust, so you wouldn't have to carry the weight of the Rhodes name. You know, he's done that to the point of giving guys different names. I mean, Curtis Axel. You know, he's not calling him anything to do with Henning. You know, maybe that's one of the reasons why I had Goldust. When you first went for the designs of the costume, was it what we saw, or was there some different ideas for it?
There was a whole bunch of ideas. There was one of me dressed up like a pharaoh. There was one that's dressed up like a rock star. It was some weird stuff. You know? And then I guess we just came to an agreement on the first actual gold.
Because the full paint and the wig, I guess that's almost something you'd see.
He didn't really want the paint. He wanted more of a makeup type deal, you know, with heavy blush, kind of like Adrian Street.
Gotcha.
Like that. I wanted to paint. I'd always been a fan of painting the faces, you know, so we gave him some looks, and, you know, after so many meetings up in Stanford, finally put it all on at the office, walk into his boardroom, and everybody's sitting there, music, Jim Johnson, everybody.
Wow.
And here I am, and they're just like, oh, wow, this is awesome, this is great. So that was
That's good shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So you had to go into the boardroom and do the full ring entrance, gong, and the whole thing. Wow. See, yeah, because the character, I mean, I've seen, you know, like some gay pride parades or something like that. You see guys dressed up like that with the full paint, and it's very, like, striking, you know, to see that you walking in there must have been quite a presence.
I think if
presence.
We were to do that stuff today.
Never.
Nobody cares anymore.
Yeah.
It's already accepted by most of society now.
You know? It's amazing how things are so much different in the mid-90s. Even Steve with, you know, the finger and drinking beer and all that sort of stuff was so, like, you know, cutting edge.
Yeah.
You know, now how was it for you at home? How old were you at this point in time?
First time.
To see your brother come out.
I don't remember how old I was. I remember I was in junior high.
Okay, and, so you're of age to know what's up.
I got into a fight because this kid, we talk about this in the locker room all the time, because I was told to revise the story to where I look good by Road Dogg. He told me, hey, you should change the story up to where you won the fight. And now I tell the story where I say I won the fight, but that's not what happened. He used a gay slur about Dustin, and he yelled it at me from across the hall. And I went, guns a-blazing, full speed to just go and knock him out. And he hit me square in the head, and I just fell over in front of everybody. And then the bell rang, and the hall cleared, and I had lost the one chance to defend the name of Goldust that I had.
Failed miserably.
But I think...
I remember you knocking him out.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. I heard
well,
the story
years later,
for years.
Years later, I went back, and he was actually at a car wash washing my car, and we had a really nice conversation.
There you go.
So I feel
you
I
tipped
felt,
him an extra 20.
I did. Okay, so... But watching it, there's this misconception that... Because him and Dad weren't talking, thus... He wasn't talking to me or my sister. So we had no communication. And there's this misconception that we were disappointed or that Dad was embarrassed of what was going on. But if you know Dad and you know him, it was the farthest thing from embarrassed. He has an eye for the sizzle. He has an eye for what, oh, this is
showbiz.
This is working.
Yes.
And just because, you know, remember, he hasn't told me this isn't this, or he hasn't smartened me up. So I'm under the impression villainizing and booing him and all that. I don't know about that. But he knew, Dusty knew, this is working. And I remember WrestleMania 12, which is my favorite pay-per-view I've ever seen in my life.
Was that Goldust and Piper?
Goldust Piper.
Right.
And Sean was my favorite, so Sean and Brett.
Mm.
And
that was the 60 man.
The okay. Iron Man. And
sorry, it's Iron Man, yeah.
I remember watching it, and I used to play with my little like Hasbro wrestling ring kind of in front of the TV, but then I'd like as I got older, I kind of just was there and I was just watching the TV. I always sat on the floor. And Pop sat on the couch behind me. And I remember I didn't want to look at him while it was all going on. You know, Dustin's been stripped down. And he's in women's lingerie, plus size lingerie. And they've kind of reenacted the OJ chase. And
classic.
And, you know, he's grabbing the, you know, groin region of, you know, there's a lot to that. Mm-hmm. And I remember I kind of just peered back at him. And he was smiling ear to ear. And he probably was a little misty-eyed over it. But I quickly...
Mm-hmm.
Turned right back because he knew that was WrestleMania.
Yeah,
and he just made himself a moment. You
know, that was an attraction. You know, of that. I think besides the 60-minute Iron Man, that was probably the semi-main event as far as attraction goes. How did that one come about? And working with Piper too, who at that point in time still had a lot of. I mean, nothing against Roddy now, but 20 years ago, he still had some fire too.
Yeah, he did. Well, it was supposed to be Scott Hall. We had started.
Oh, really?
The whole angle with Scott Hall, but I guess he decided to. We were going to have a Miami street fight via satellite from Miami.
Goldust versus Razor Ramon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, he left. So we started the thing because we just had enough time to build up the story with Piper. Started doing the vignettes, all that stuff. And just after TV, he said, okay, Vince said, okay, you're flying with me to LA tomorrow. And this is 2 weeks before or 3 weeks before Mania. I'm like, okay. So Bruce, him, myself, and Roddy get on the plane the next day after TV, and we go to L.A., and we go eat, and we're talking about it a little bit. We were going to have this backlot brawl. I had no idea what I was going to do, you know, or what was going on. We get to the Universal Studios, and they have all this stuff set up. Brand new white Bronco that Roddy got. And I got the crappy piece of garbage, gold spray-painted Cadillac. So I asked Vince, I said, okay, we're looking around at stuff to do, and basically I was not to get any offensive move in this whole thing except one, and that was a low blow, basically, and then get in the car and drive off. I'm looking around. I said, Vince, can I just try out this car just to make sure it can screech around the corner, you know, when I see Roddy, you know, rev up the engine, all that stuff. So I practiced that a couple times, and like some stunt driver or something. I was feeling pretty cool. So we get the cue to go, and I pull around the corner. There's one of those big, giant fire hoses, and I'm revving it up. You know, I skid around, I stop. He starts squirting. He turns on the water things and just blows the car like crazy, and then grabs a baseball bat. Hmm. And he comes over. He told me he was going to, you know, bust out the windows and then we'd fight from there and this and that, and then end up on the hood of the car and fall off, and there's a little blow. I drive off. He's supposed to move. So we're going at it. He busts the windshield. He busts the side of the window. Glass is flying everywhere, man. And I crawl out the other side, and he commences to whooping my ass hard.
With the bat?
No,
oh,
he hit me a couple times with the bat.
But just
tried to pull it, you know. But it was like there's a couple of slips in there. There's tables, big giant garbage dumpsters, and he's throwing me into all this stuff. And you know, Vince did not want any juice. I wanted to be hard weight. I figure Roddy knows how to hard weight somebody, you know, since he's been in the business 50 years.
Right.
Hopefully he can, you know, hard weight me. So I talked to Roddy about that. So sure, no problem. So we end up. The spot I wanted to do it was I'm laying on top of the Cadillac, and he's mounted on top of me, and he's giving me a couple shots. I said, okay, come on, hit me. He hits me so hard in the forehead, I mean, just square, boom. And I was like, what the hell, man? That's not the spot. And I'm like, come on, do it again. And the second time he did it, if you watch it back, he broke his hand.
Ooh.
On my forehead, yeah. And I had a concussion pretty bad, and he had a broken hand. We both went to the hospital that night.
But no color.
No color. A little bit from him hitting the baseball bat and the glass and stuff like that. So I roll off. My head's just killing me, and I'm like, no blood. And I'm like, I'm so mad. And I give him the low blow, and I jump in my car. And I'm supposed to hit and clip his Bronco on the way out, and then he jumps and dives out of the way. But as I'm revving up, I'm looking at Roddy standing there. So I go, I miss the Bronco because I'm just focused kind of on Roddy.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I'm waiting for Roddy to move. And this is a one take thing.
Right.
You can't go.
Did you film this the day before, earlier in the morning, or?
Like 3 weeks before.
3 weeks before WrestleMania. Wow, okay.
And I see Roddy, and I realize the last second he's not going to jump out of the way. And I'm not going real fast, but fast enough that, you know, I don't want to kill the guy, but I can't stop unless I drive over him.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, his knees just hit the front of the Cadillac, just boom!
Oh.
Landed up on top of the car, and I'm like, oh, and I'm looking at him. He's looking at me straight through the windshield. I'm just like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. He's dead. He's going to die. Oh, my God. And he's staring at me. I'm just like, get off the car so I can drive around the corner. We can cut this shot because he has to get in his Bronco and chase me. And that's where the OJ footage with not a lot of people realize that that's the truth.
That was actual OJ footage.
Yes.
Okay.
Takes place. So he rolls off. And when he rolls off, I clip a bumper. I mean, a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
The dumpster is headed towards the president and CEO of Universal Studios. I think he had a. It was a nice car,
like a Mercedes or a Lamborghini or BMW or.
It was a Rolls Royce.
Okay.
It was a Rolls, and it was going, and he's got the handheld on his shoulder, and he's running, trying to hold the dumpster from hitting this guy's car, and I see it in the rearview mirror. You know, I don't know where Roddy is. Finally, they cut. They take us to the hospital and all that, and then, you know, the day of the show, we're in the back of the parking lot in my piece of crap gold Cadillac, and he's right beside me in his white Bronco. And, you know, match one takes place, then there's something, then match two, then there's something, and they start showing they're on their way to the Anaheim, it looks like.
You know? Oh, okay, right.
And they just show the white Bronco, you know, chase scene. So finally, it's our time, right? And we get the cue from Kasama. She was working the parking lot at that time. And I'm supposed to bust through the barricade. He's supposed to give me 3 seconds before he takes off, or five or something like that, and go down the ramp and at the pond.
Yep.
And then as I swing the door open, he's supposed to clip the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to crawl out the other side. So I take off, and he didn't wait too long, you know? And it's like... So I get down the ramp, and I look in the rearview mirror, and there he is. And I'm trying to be as fast as I can, slap it into a park and slam the door open. And when I did that, I pushed it so hard that it closed back.
Uh-huh, right.
And he clipped the door, and I was just like, shit. So I rolled out the other side and ran into the arena, you know, and I had to make my makeup just like it was, which was really cool for me, you know, and the blood spots from where –
yeah,
Roddy had, you know, it was really neat.
Something that happened 3 weeks earlier. Now it's the live finish, right?
Really cool. And I'm right at the tunnel, and Marlena, my ex-wife Terry, she's there, you know, and she's like, "Oh God!" And then you hear Roddy screaming, and there's cameras everywhere, and it's like, I'm supposed to back up through the tunnel, and boom, I'm in the arena, you know, and it's just like, and I guess they're showing it through the crowd on the screens, mm-hmm. and what. And I back up through there, and they start booing. Then the bagpipe music hits, man, and it's just deafening. It was so cool, and I'm just backing up. No, no, no. And we go on, and we have our match. And the one thing that I wanted to do is that we were, you know, the rehearsal week when we're there for, mm-hmm. for Mania. We're talking about the stuff, and me and my wife had gone to Frederick's of Hollywood. And I said, Terry, what do you think? You think Vince would let me wear this underneath, you know, my gold dust suit, just some lingerie, some black lingerie in the fat girl section? So I bought it just before I asked him, you know, and asked him. He was like, oh, damn, that's a good idea, yes. And the idea, you know, him to rip off my clothes and I'm in ladies' lingerie, and that's really the match, you know, that was the end of the match. And it was
that's the finish.
Awesome. So much fun.
That's like you said, a classic moment that lives on to this day as being a WrestleMania moment. Now you're watching this at home with your dad growing up. We talked earlier about how when Dustin started, there was a little bit of kind of a trial by fire and paying the dues. How did you get in the business, and did your dad always know you were going in, or did you have to sit him down one day and say, Dad, this is my time to go?
very, very different childhoods. Mm-hmm. So as been kind of well documented as right. far as like when Dustin was a kid, dad was on the road 7 days a week, except mm-hmm. for Christmas and the summer, and like it was just an absurd schedule he had,
right,
and
right.
they didn't get much interaction. Whereas me and Pop, completely different. He was like my football coach.
Did you guys have the same mom?
No, we have
okay,
different moms.
Okay. Yep.
So we.
So he was your football coach.
He was everything. Yeah. He came to every wrestling match. He missed one. I mean, he was everything. And I think he really wanted to correct any mistakes mm-hmm. he might have made. And he's tops in my mm-hmm. book. Mm-hmm. But the same goes for. He opened up a wrestling school when I was 15. Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling. It was one of the most fun times mm-hmm. ever.
That had a good reputation for being an independent company too.
It did, and we didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know, because he is used to 14,000. He's 8,000. You know, he's used to that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're getting 400 people on a Friday night in Carrollton, Georgia, twice a month for independence, that was really good. He didn't know it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Dustin, I was 15 years old, and my initial moment was I was going to be an official. And I thought I'd be like the cool official. I had like a black Under Armour long sleeve under my stripes. He did the same thing he did to Dustin, too. Less of a charge, though, when I drove to the building with my mom, 15, cop pulled right behind me, Carrollton, Georgia, Villa Rica, at the VFW, cop pulled right behind me. I need you to step out of the car. My dad and all the boys are watching me through the door.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom, who I don't think he really involved her in the bit, and she's, like, yelling with this deep southern accent she has, and handcuffs me and puts me in the back of the car and then never gives me why or what.
Yeah.
And I thought I had done something on the road. I got a drive learner's permit. That's why I'm driving my mom to begin with. And he drives one time around the building and then never even said a word. He got like the most like Porky like Pig type. Like the cop was cool, but like yeah. he didn't really even know what he was doing.
Boss hog.
So he did the same thing to me that he did to Dustin. And I was allowed to attend his wrestling school. I did it on the weekends and the weekdays at the office he had, but I wasn't allowed to have a match.
Mm-hmm.
But man, every chance, I was doing everything I could possibly do with different, you know, like Scotty Riggs mm-hmm. and just the different various kind of a fallout from the power plant.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of gentlemen from that place, they showed up, Ray Lloyd.
Filthy Ray Lloyd.
You know, Burning Love. There was just some names. It was just so much fun because I was in high school, so I'm doing this on the weekends. And
did you ever call Dustin up to get any advice, or were you guys talking at that point?
So Dustin, he showed back up in our family. I was actually the first person, other than him and Dad, who had, Barry
mm-hmm,
had them
mm-hmm.
reconcile. But I was the first person of Mom or Teal, my sister, to see him. He pulled up in... what was one of like four brand new trucks he would have over the series of the next 3 months. So it's kind of the rib he spends every dime he makes. But I was pissed at him, mm-hmm. you know, and I'd never told him that, but I was only 15, 16. Mm-hmm. I don't know the full story. So I'm pissed at him that you've missed.
Dustin.
Yeah. That you've missed 5 years mm-hmm. here, but I don't know the full story.
Right.
So I really can't be pissed at you. And, he took a really active interest in my amateur wrestling career, which I wanted to be the one Rhodes that could actually amateur wrestle. That was like one of my big things. Because in the South, when you wrestle amateur-wise and your dad is Dusty Rhodes, you'd be blown away. These parents think it's...
Yeah.
They think it's Starcade and that their son just beat Dusty Rhodes, even though they just beat a gangly teenager who doesn't have any technique and doesn't know, you know?
Yeah.
So I went Vision Quest on my amateur wrestling career. I was obsessed with it. Obsessed. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to keep going with it. And Dustin took a really active interest in it. And we actually, a few times, got to roll around. You know, we did the same thing every time. He'd back me up in the corner and give me a arm drag, like all the way to the other side, which I've never seen him once do in the ring today. It's just like this really violent arm drag to the other side of the ring. I got the chance to referee a match with him and Dad a few times.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me a little moment at a show we did at my high school, which mm-hmm. I was like a hero. Like it was like a guy shoved me, charged me, and I gave him like an arm drag. Yeah, it was just absurd. But as far as Dad's weird as far as Dad didn't want Dustin to get into the industry. He'll tell you he didn't want me to get into the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But he never told me what else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Never, hey, explore this career option, explore that career option, or you should do that. Never. And he brought me to every wrestling event that was in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, in that area, every one. So what the hell else?
Yeah.
You know, like...
He's kind of forcing you into that.
Yeah,
area,
like,
yeah.
He literally, Doug Dillinger had... I'd be there at the building. I would say hi to Doug Dillinger. Mm-hmm. He would go be his be boss, dad, and I would... Nothing. Mm-hmm. The merch people knew who I was, so I'd go up to the merch stand. I'd get a Sting, a latex paint thing. So I'd get it. I'd go into the bathroom in the arena. This is the same arena as we go to today. I'd paper towel it all over my face. I wouldn't wait long enough. And then I'd peel it off. So I had like a really bad Sting paint on almost every show. I was obsessed.
Yeah.
Like I was walking through the locker rooms and I had little interest in what was happening backstage. I wanted to watch
the matches.
The matches, you know, like.
Yeah. Now, how did you feel about that, Dustin, when you knew that he was going to get into the business?
I don't remember.
Where were you in when I went to Louisville? I was 19.
I mean, did you just think it was inevitable that your kid brother would get in the business?
I didn't think it was inevitable he would be in the business.
And yeah.
I know he went to L.A. to try his chops at acting.
Oh, that's right. You studied acting, too.
Yeah. And Dustin wrote in his book that I had no interest in wrestling and that I wanted to be an actor. And then, like, Wade Barrett came up to me like, oh, so you didn't care.
Getting on to
yeah. It's a complete lie. Fabrication.
Get a little bit of a sibling rivalry going on here.
I'm really good.
I went to the acting school because I thought I was not big enough to be in.
But you're a big guy.
I just didn't think I was. Yeah. Dustin is like under, like people don't even realize how big,
how tall he is. Right. You're not as tall, but you got more muscle. You got the muscle tone that Dustin doesn't have.
Well, I didn't. None of this. All these
besides
guys,
that bicep, which is pretty awesome.
All these guys I thought were considerably bigger. And I just, that was, I thought, okay, maybe I can't cut it in sports entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to be in entertainment to some degree. And the whole time I was in L.A., the whole time I'm just watching, like, Randy had just kind of come into the fray on WWE, and I'm thinking, like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, this is, I'm wasting time. Like, and it was nice to live in L.A. and Howard.
Well, I don't think you were wasting your time.
No, apparently not.
Especially now. Yeah, I mean.
Well, Howard, fine. The school, I was horrible.
Howard Fine's a very reputable acting coach, though, one of the best in the business.
He just went to the Performance Center.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he just took five guys and had a workshop at the Performance Center.
But
so.
See, when I left the WWE in 2005, I went and studied acting for the same reason. When I came up with that character in 2007, like the suit-wearing heel, that completely came from what I learned in acting. So there really is, you've probably never taken acting lessons, but your character playing that role of Goldust, both as the androgynous character and then the comedy character that you did with Booker T with some of the best stuff, that's playing a character. Because the real life Dustin is very laid back and how's it going, man? How you doing? But you get out there, put the paint on, and it's, you know, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, Alice Cooper stuff.
The real life Dustin is not very laid back. He has the worst case of travel anxiety I've ever in any individual.
Well, he was here today at the arena about earlier, I think probably about two.
Case of traveling.
You've seen him, Chris. He's waiting by the door to board an hour before the flight. He's the first one on. Like, he's traveling anxiety. Worst documented case of it.
You got to get there.
I got to get there and be the first one off. Yep. It's all right. It's just one of my little things.
But when you started here in the WWE, I mean, you had right off the bat, I think we were talking about Randy Orton with the legacy with you and Teddy, DiBiase and Randy. You're a lot like your brother in that you've always had a role here. There's been different versions of the role, but you've been involved in something ever since you came through the door. And that's a pretty good sign. It's a good way to be growing within the business. I mean, how did you feel like some of the things that you've done have paid off? Did you enjoy Legacy? Did you enjoy some of those things that you've done?
Well, Legacy was, say what you want about Randy and his being Randy, but he was an excellent.
I think Randy's top two in the business.
I mean, but as far as a leader is concerned, he set me and Ted down in the arena.
Really?
He didn't. I mean, he wanted it to work for us financially. Mm-hmm. He wanted to work for us where we have the similar moments that he's felt. I mean, he
he was excellent mm-hmm. in that regards, and he wasn't. He really is. I think a lot more of a sensitive person than people realize. Mm-hmm. He really wanted that to work for us. Actually, I met you for the very first time in Japan. It was right before we went to Japan, but I was still tagging with Bob Holly, and we were in Roppongi. And I remember you said something that was really valuable because I debuted too soon. I felt I was a little undersized, a little underwhelming. I didn't have a clue. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things like, well, he's Dusty's kid. He should know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I'd never actually been like, I say to this day, I don't think I've ever really formally been trained as far as like the hammer locks and wrist locks.
Oh, all. Really?
Yeah. I feel like I...
Well, what did you learn in Louisville?
I loved Louisville.
Who
but
was
Louis,
the trainer? Was
Louisville.
Is that Danny Davis?
Danny and Al, and I loved them, and they sing Dustin's praises to mm-hmm. me all the time, but it was more of about the moments and the in-betweens mm-hmm. and less, you know, Robert Gibson was probably the most actual, hey, here's how you do a, you know, inside cradle.
Not the most technically adept performer.
But yeah, he was the one, that's what he chose to teach me, so maybe that's why. But I remember you told me, you were like, you know, you're going to learn some things in this situation. You're going to learn some things to do. You're probably going to learn some things not to do. Mm-hmm. And I always was really fond of that meeting because at the time I was pretty miserable.
I remember that you, me, and I took you and Brian Kendrick. For Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
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 Take a couple of the young guys out. Yeah. Yeah. Got a weird mix that was.
That's probably the only time I've gone had Korean barbecue to this day.
That was good. That was awesome. I forgot about that, man. So yeah, so you came through with Legacy, and then the thing that sticks out for me was the mustache guy. I'm not sure why you had the mustache, but it was something that you definitely were able to work with and do very well with. Why did you have the mustache?
So it was funny earlier. Dustin was saying that he didn't want the run to end, so hopefully Cody's not hurt. Yeah. So when I was tagging with Damian, I felt like Damian was like, man. I hope Cody does get hurt.
I want this run to end.
You know, we've known each other for a long time, but I don't think we were fond of the Team Road Scholars.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I got I took a backdrop, and I just didn't.
That's right.
I didn't fully make it all the way over, and I landed. I very lucky. I dodged a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tore my trap, I tore my delt, I had a really bad concussion, but no surgery.
And it looked like you broke your neck.
Yeah.
That was real vicious looking.
And now I take what I call the AWA backdrop.
Nice.
So in the time gone, I just was like, I'm going to do it. You know, because nobody in my family, I think, because I have a little bit different genetics.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is a part Cuban.
Oh, okay.
So there's some elements. I look at Dad and I look at Dustin and I'm like, I think I could grow this mustache. You know, I don't, because Dad can't to this day. He tries and he can't.
Dustin used to have a sweet mustache. The big handlebar, yeah, Fu Manchu mustache.
Yeah. So I grew the mustache, and long story short, I was coming back to take my impact test to make sure that I'm cleared mm-hmm. from the concussion. So this is 3 weeks later, and I've kind of making a rapid, mm-hmm. feel really good. So I got the mustache the night before, and it's just like whiskers because it's like brown. I was like, you know what? I'm going to get some Just for Men. I'm going to darken it up, and I'm going to put on my Miami suit, which is like this khaki suit.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like a, you know, like a crime lord look, and I'm going right. to just go to, because I'm not working tomorrow, I'm going to go and see what happens. And I go, and first person I see is my boss, is Vince, and he gets really close to my face, really close to my mm-hmm. face, and I'll never forget it. He goes, I can still tell it's you under there. Just this mustache. There's nothing to this, you know. And I'm like, he said, I like it. So I was like, I didn't think anything. I was just a conversation in passing, just complimented it. And then I realized, this is it now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a mustache.
Yeah.
And I was, when we came back in Bridgeport and they started chanting Cody's mustache, I didn't. It's just something I never...
It's amazing what people latch onto.
I never thought...
Cody's mustache.
I just couldn't believe it. And then, like...
It was over,
the
man.
The only person who just hates that mustache this day, and if you bring it up to him,
He will Arn.
Arn hated
Arn
it.
Arn said that I bought up all the mustache t-shirts and all the there was
that
a,
stupid mustache.
Yeah, there was a Walmart exclusive figure. He said you have to buy all those up because I told him, you know, I made a little money off of, you know.
No, you didn't. You bought them all up yourself.
And just
but
he hates it, and he thinks it was a case where he said to me, "You don't have that mustache," and I went against him, you know, in that one. And to this day, he.
Little animosity.
A little animosity over it. That was one of the ones I went against him on.
But the thing I always heard, too, the rumors that you guys always wanted to have a match at WrestleMania. Because was that true? Had you pitched that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is before you had ever worked together.
Well, there's one. This was first year was I had been fired, I guess.
Again.
At home, yes. And I was just started stuff on Twitter to see if there's any –
interest,
to it,
yeah.
You know, I was interested in it, so let's see if we can get some interest. Built up for a year, didn't happen. Second year, came back, having a pretty good run, injured my shoulder, had to get surgery. Johnny said, why don't you be a producer? So I tried that for a year, and during that year, in the meeting, we brought it to Vince's attention. Hey, Cody didn't have an opponent at that time for the IC title, and they were trying to figure out who to put in there. For Mania in Miami, and we brought it up for me to face him, and he just basically shot it down, absolutely not. So, you know, I've asked him a couple times, a few times, and he said no each time, but the last time that we actually talked about it, he said not yet. So maybe there's still some hope in there. You know, I would love to have a
golden
match with Cody.
The Golden Army would love. You know about the Golden Army?
No, what's the Golden Army?
I think we could put on a good match. You know, it's probably not going to be a 30-minute match, the Golden Army.
I'll tell you about the Golden Army. The Golden Army is, during that run he had on Twitter, it's a group of people that, I don't know how many is in numbers of this Golden Army. They use similar hashtags and stuff like that, but they love Goldust. But even now, even when we came back and won our jobs, but even like as having like embraced one another, on television, Cody Rhodes is enemy numero uno of the Golden Army. And this this about 350-plus pound girl, I'm not going to name her name,
right.
Came to a signing of mine with a Golden Army t-shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh, you know, I'll just make a little joke with her when she gets through. She waited 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make a little, you know, joke, you know, oh, I know where you got that shirt, something. Yeah. But there's real like animosity that he's developed with these people. This still happens to this day. And she comes up in line and I go, oh, I know where you got that shirt. And she just stared a hole right through me. Stared a hole after waiting 45 minutes. I said, would you want me to sign something for you? She kept staring. You must be a Goldust fan, huh? Kept staring at me. And then just waddled up next to me. Took a picture with me.
Did you just say waddle?
I don't want to get too deep here. Took a picture next to me, and I'm just standing there, and then she left without ever having said a word. And I don't know. I looked for it on Twitter, but yeah, there's.
She probably took that and throwing darts at her, shooting at her or something, right?
To this day, they don't appreciate Cody Rhodes.
But then you mentioned you wanted to have the WrestleMania match, but the second best thing is they put you guys together as a team when you guys won your jobs back and all that sort of thing. Suddenly, you guys go on this roll where it's like, I even text you, like, dude, you guys are having like the best match every night. I mean, that definitely must have reinvigorated, I don't know if it was your passion or whatever, but you were on fire, Dustin, you too, Cody. It's like every night was a great match, it seems.
This is probably I said earlier, you know, when I got in the business was the funnest time. This would have to be. I had, you know, WrestleMania 12 was my number one, but this run with Cody and us winning the tag team titles and all that stuff and working the Shield every night and just 25-minute, 30-minute matches, just tearing it up, having fun, me being 45 years old and him being young and me going out there and, you know, proving to myself that I can still do it and be one of the best at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just took a new look, lost a lot of weight, got in shape, and everybody noticed that. And I was like, I was feeling good. And I'm just glad I get to do it with my brother because this has been a real fun run.
I think it's a combination of things that we don't talk about that often, but, like, for the first time, the three of us, Pop got to be dad. He wasn't going to be in a match. He wasn't going to fight
the Shield. You know, he's like, right. We got to be the patriarch, Anthony Hopkins in The Legends of the Fall. He hates that parallel. But that's who he got to be. And Dustin had cleaned up his entire life.
Mm-hmm. Sober now for 6 years, you
six
said.
6 years. Like, yeah. It's amazing. Very, yeah. In a very real way. Not mm-hmm. in one of those ways that you hear like yeah. she in the business where, oh, yeah, and then you see yes. something and you're like, no, that's not the case. He had committed to this new lifestyle, and it all like kind of just came together at the same time, and me with a huge chip on my shoulder so badly wanting to break on through to the next level. And it literally couldn't have been better timing, because mm-hmm. we didn't think we were going to tag together other than that one night.
I thought they were just bringing me up to work with Randy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to
just as a one night thing. Right? Yeah.
And go back home. And they, you know, everybody's asking me, so how long are you back for? And I'm like, just tonight. Yeah. I promise. I'm going back home.
So what happened? You worked the match, and then they call you after and offer you something more substantial.
Yeah.
See, because, you know, you're too damn good, man. That's the thing about this character and about yourself. And plus being straight, like you said, that I think that was always maybe one of your cut downs in the business.
Yeah, it was. I mean, to know that I can go out there and really have some fun now,
clear-headed, yeah.
is really cool. I can see, like, what to do and what to listen for and things like that. Even though it's winding down my career, it's mm-hmm. awesome. So I'm just trying to make up for lost time.
And now with the Dust and the Gold Dust alter ego, we've got Cody. Stardust is in the picture now. That must be kind of – how is that being in this tag team situation now?
Well, I can neither confirm nor deny that I am Stardust. Heavy speculation is that I am Stardust.
But the rumor is that Stardust, yeah.
Rumor is that I am Stardust. Yeah. I can say that the thing I'm most just – baffled by with the Stardust and Goldust dynamic is that somehow Stardust is weirder in some strange way or more bizarre mm-hmm. than the bizarre one. And I think if we're talking about people's interest in watching a match between Goldust and Cody Rhodes, I think maybe the interest has shifted to watching a match between Goldust and perhaps Stardust.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can say is a match I would want to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I agree with you. And final question on that. I think I know what you're going to say, Dustin, but what's your favorite match that you've ever had? Give us one. I mean, we know we talked about the Piper one in detail, but is there...
Shawn Michaels in Detroit.
Yeah, it was a great match.
Undertaker. One of my favorite matches was with you on Super
That's Trials. Right, man.
I wish we would have been on Raw.
Me too. I forgot. You know, I was thinking about that. I think that could be the only time we've ever worked too. That was a great match. If anybody ever
changed and all that stuff with you and Christian.
Yeah, you and Booker. Like that. We had good chemistry there too. Yeah.
I think we really do have good chemistry. And then Randy. Yeah. Randy's mm-hmm. always had a good match with him.
So yeah, he's like I said, he's one of the best.
And, you know, the Battleground pay per view, which was mm-hmm. We won our jobs back.
Who was that match?
It was with the Shield.
Oh, okay.
With Dad ringside, that was very special.
That's cool. How about you, Cody?
Favorite match?
Yeah, that you've had.
Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people will choose to. Everyone's got like their allies and their team, and mm-hmm. I see something in somebody, and Rey Mysterio saw something in me, and
great.
He's always number one. I'll fight any man who says a negative thing about
I'll have to join you on
Rey
that.
Mysterio. And I can say as much as I love that match, it's my favorite match. I thought we might talk about this, but it was one of those situations where it happened after you guys.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Had wrestled so frequently.
We had like about a 3 or 4 month program.
Man, talk about the bar being set very high, pulling his mask off on a 619, and just, I mean, it was it helped me to step my game up.
Yeah, and you guys took that into WrestleMania. That was a good feud, mm-hmm. too. Well, dudes, thank you so much, man. This has been great. Always a pleasure, and I'm glad I got to do this with you guys.
Thank you. Too, hell yeah.
Thanks to Goldust and Stardust. The new Fozzy album is out. Do you want to start a war? Big thanks to all of you who checked it out. Big thanks to all of you who bought it. You got to come see us live next month when we hit the road with Theory of a Dead Man. But if you're sitting on the fence, you got to buy this record. Support your bands. Support the music that you love. Every record makes a difference. Trust me. Big thanks to you for buying the record. And a big thanks if you're doing your online shopping through my Amazon link. Okay, it totally helps out the show. Helps out Fozzy. Helps out me. And it's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, Amazon Canada, Amazon UK, and everybody's going Amazon, Amazon USA. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for a time. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done, and you're helping me out in the process. And that's it. Another fun-filled edition of Talk is Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. In the meantime and in between time, that's it. We'll see you next Friday. I got special effects wizard pioneer, one of the greatest of all time. He created Jason Voorhees, man. Yeah, that's right. I got the godfather of gore, Tom Savini, coming up. It's going to be an amazing show. It's going to be a bloody gory show. And it's all for you. So we'll see you on Friday, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.